The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the Upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Hey, my name is Brian. I get to come and open up the Word from time to time. My wife and I attend the Summit campus in Simpsonville, so I'm glad to see you this morning. I don't know about you, but I am still occasionally finding myself putting 2024 rather than 2025. It is 2025, right? Right. I just still find myself occasionally doing that. I'm sure that most of you know when you write 2025, you don't have to put AD after that, right? Although that's the right way to identify it. We look at our calendars BC and AD. AD from the Latin Anno Domini, the year of the Lord, BC before Christ. That all came into practice years ago, hundreds of years ago, actually. What it means is that we currently chart time based on an event, the entrance of Jesus into the world. We look at that and we mark our calendar from when Jesus stepped onto the planet. Now, other religions might not do that. Other people don't do that. There's another way of designating time. Some people refer to CE or BCE. CE referring to the common era, BCE before the common era. Because they don't want to make mention of Jesus or the year of the Lord, so they look at it a different way. But the fact is, we chart our lives based on an event. Jesus stepped in the world, and our calendar reflects that. But as we're going to see this morning, that's not the case for the Jews. Jews today will still use BCE and CE, but there's a different kind of calendar change for the Jews that actually is anchored in the text that we're going to read this morning out of Exodus chapter 12. We're going to read and discover and think about what's going on with them and then ask questions about what are the implications for us. A brief review. It's been some weeks. We've been walking our way through the book of Exodus, and we've looked at the 10 plagues, actually the 9 of the first 10 plagues. That is God's undertaking to bring the descendants of Abraham out of Egypt. They've been in slavery in Egypt for 400 years. They're not there because of sin. They're not there because of disobedience. They're there because God promised Abraham, your descendants, we're going to be in a land. I'm going to grow them up during that time. And that time of 400 years is going to end with their slavery. And then God promised Abraham he would, with a mighty hand, rescue his people out of Egypt and take them into the land that he promised. They would be his people. They would recognize Yahweh as the God, the Lord who had cared for them. In fact, that was explained to Moses back in Exodus chapter 3, where God said, this is what's going on. I'm doing this because I'm being faithful to my promise to Abraham. This is playing out just as I intended. And there is a new experience of life for them that's on the far end of this departure from Egypt. A new life is being held out for them. Those plagues leading up to this moment were all ways of God showing off, God making himself known in very, very tangible ways. God is revealing himself in what he is doing in those plagues. Each of the plagues, you may remember, they tended to focus on one or another of the Egyptian gods. Basically, the Lord, his name is Yahweh, the Lord, the God of Israel, was making it very clear, these gods that the Egyptians worship, they're not gods. I'm the true God. I am the one God. And so he takes initiative to reveal himself to the Egyptians. He takes initiative to remind his people of who he is and what he wants for them. And God wants his people to know him and experience him. That's what's going on in those plagues. And now we come to the last of the plagues, and we're in Exodus chapter 12. I'm going to start in verse 1. I'd love for you to read along. It's always really helpful to bring a copy of the scriptures with you when you come on a Sunday morning. These words are the words that matter. What you hear on Sunday morning from anyone who teaches, that's helpful, but these are the words that matter. So being able to find yourself in the book is really helpful. Being able to anchor yourself in the text of scripture is really helpful. So if you have a copy of the scriptures, open with me to Exodus chapter 12. The Lord, when it's all in capital letters like that, that is the name of God. Yahweh, the Lord, said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, this month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to his father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat, you shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses in which they eat. They shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire. With unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roast it, its head with its legs and inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am Yahweh, the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. As a statute forever, you shall keep it as a feast. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven out of your houses. For if anyone eats what is leavened from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day you shall hold a holy assembly, and on the seventh day a holy assembly. No work shall be done on those days. But what everyone needs to eat, that alone may be prepared by you. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. And on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a statute forever. In the first month, from the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven is to be found in your houses. If anyone eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwelling place you shall eat unleavened bread. Then Moses called all the elders of Israel and said to them, go and select lambs for yourselves according to your clans and kill the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin and touch the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. None of you shall go out of the door of his house until the morning, for the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to enter your houses to strike you. You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and for your sons forever. And when you come to the land that the Lord will give you, as he has promised, you shall keep this service. And when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. For he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses. And the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the people of Israel went and did so as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron. So they did. And at midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive, who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where someone was not dead. Then he summoned Moses and Aaron by night and said, up, go out from among my people, both you and the people of Israel, and go serve Yahweh, as you have said. Take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone, and bless me also. Now, this is the text we want to live in this morning. I am aware that many Christians, many of those who've grown up in church, when they hear or read this account, they immediately leap to thinking about Jesus and his death that procures our salvation. There seems to be some kind of remembrance of that, the blood, the lamb, the death passing over. I would suggest, although it is always spiritually healthy to think about Jesus and all that he's done for us, I'd like to ask you to initially hold loosely any direct connection between this passage and Jesus' death for us so that we can listen better and see better what we're told here in this passage. I want to think really well. What would the Jews living through that first Passover have experienced? What would the Jews living through that Passover have thought? This is what I think we need to wrestle with. What would it have meant to them in that moment to experience that initial Passover? Because that's what this text is about. Exodus chapter 12 is about that first Passover. So let's start with just some basic observations about what's going on in the text. First thing to notice is that God is making a distinction between those who are His and those who are not. That's really clear, right? Blood's going to be marking the doors, but those who are His are one kind of people. Those who are not are different. In chapter 11, God had actually said when He was talking about what was coming, He said, "About midnight I will go out in the midst of Egypt, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the cattle. There shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there has never been but will never be again. But not a dog shall growl against any of the people of Israel, either man or beast, that you may know the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel." The first thing to notice here is that the purpose that God has in mind when He's doing this, so that you, the children of Israel, so that you may know, God is making a distinction between you and the Egyptians. When Yahweh moves through Egypt that night, it will be clear to everyone who are His people and who are not. Yahweh is executing judgment against the gods who are not Him. That was in chapter 12. We read that. "I'm going to execute judgment against those that are not gods." Throughout, in fact, the series of plagues that we've been looking at, God repeatedly says, "Let my people go." This is what He's emphasizing. There are some who are my people. There are some who are not. So participating, the Jews who participated in this first Passover, it was the people's way of affirming and celebrating, we belong to Him. We're His people. That's why we're doing this. So that we remind ourselves and we know that we are His. In fact, in chapter 12, verse 11, God says, "This is my Passover. You're celebrating it because you're my people." So the first thing to notice is that the Passover is about identifying His people as His. That's what they would have been experiencing as they participated in this Passover. Second thing to note, God intended this feast, this celebration, to be celebrated annually. It was supposed to be a perpetual feast, to be celebrated again and again and again. They, in fact, are going to mark their calendar based on the Passover. It's going to be the first of the month for them. They change their calendar based on this event. Year in and year out, it's supposed to happen. "This day," verse 14, "shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations." Verse 17, "You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a statute forever." Verse 24, "You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and your sons forever. And when you come to the land that the Lord will give you, as He promised, you shall keep this service. And when your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It's the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. For He passed over the houses of the people of the land of Egypt when He struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses.'" They're supposed to be remembering this move from one kind of life into another kind of life. Notice the language here in verse 27. "When your children," after you're settled in the land, as you're celebrating this year in and year out, and your children ask you, what is this celebration that we're doing? You're supposed to remind them of what happened long ago, but notice the language in verse 27. "When your children say to you, 'What do you mean by this service?' you shall say, 'It is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, for He passed over the houses of the people of the land of the people of Israel in Egypt when He struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses.'" When you're remembering this, you're supposed to be thinking about it as my deliverance, even though that happened years ago when you're settled in the land and now you're celebrating. It is this reminder. This is the thing that's supposed to be repeated time and time again to remember. It's a regular celebration to help them remind themselves of their being God's people. It is like what God says in Exodus chapter 2 to Moses when he says, I'm remembering my covenant with Abraham. It's not like God was divinely amnesiac, that the children of Israel are in Egypt, they're there for 400 years, he knew that they were there, he sent them there, and then one day, what does he wake up and he go, oh, I forgot, I left the toast in the oven. No, it's not like he had forgotten. When it says that he remembered his covenant, that means he's going to act in light of what is true. He's going to act in light of the promise. When the children of Israel are called to remember and remember and remember and do this year and year, it's not as if, yeah, do you remember there was something that happened way, 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 way long ago? No, that idea of remembering is to be living in light of the reality of what God had done. That idea of remembrance is to make it real and personal, bringing their lives into a recollection of what God had done to define their lives, to help them live lives defined by the work of God. That's what the feast, the regular celebration is supposed to be. It's like, oh, we're defined by him. He's the one that defined who we are. He's the one that brought us into this new kind of life. That's what they're supposed to be remembering when they celebrate the Passover year after year after year. And here's the third thing to note. Did you notice how they're supposed to celebrate? They celebrate with a special meal. Yes, a lamb or goat, we're told, is supposed to be killed, and the blood placed on the door. But that part is never repeated. Get that? The blood on the doorpost and the lintel, that's never repeated. What they're to repeat is the celebratory feast. Apparently, it's the celebratory feast that's supposed to be the reminder. That's what they're supposed to pick up on. What is to be repeated is the meal. Look at chapter 12, verse 8. They shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They shall eat it. And you shall let none of it, verse 10, remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and a staff in your hand. You shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. What's being emphasized there? What do you think the experience would have been like to participate in that meal? You eat a lamb or a goat. But notice, no leftovers. If you don't finish it, you burn it. And how are you supposed to eat it? You're supposed to eat it, notice what it says, with your belt fastened. That is, hooking up your garment and make sure that the belt is tied tightly around it. You're supposed to eat it with your sandals on your feet, not typically the way that you would eat. You take the shoes off before you ate. You're supposed to eat it with your staff in your hand, and you're supposed to hurry it up. Eat it in haste. What are they supposed to be thinking about? What do you think they're thinking about when they're eating the meal that way? I think they've got to be thinking, we're out of here. Do you understand what I'm saying? You go on a vacation, and you know you have to be checked out by 11 o'clock. You're in a hotel or a VRBO, and so the night before, what do? You clean out the refrigerator. You pack the stuff that needs to go. You get up in the morning. You hurry through the morning routine. You get everything packed. You get all your clothes on that you're going to wear, and you throw the trash away because what are you thinking? We're out of here. We're leaving. What was being repeated time and time and time and time again, year after year after year, was this memorial that we're leaving. They would have been thinking, minimally they would have been thinking, we no longer belong here. We are no longer staying here. We are no longer going to be living that kind of life. We are leaving the kingdom of Egypt, and we are going to be God's people in a fresh and fuller and freer way. This is the part that they're supposed to be remembering. This is the journeying into a new kind of life. I do not think when the children of Israel walked out of their houses in the morning and saw the blood on the doorposts that they were thinking about forgiveness. I think they're thinking about It's done. Let it burn. We're done with that. We're going somewhere else. Do you understand what I'm saying? I think the significance of the Passover was about we're stepping into a new kind of relationship with the living God. Throughout their history, the Lord gave Israel 7 feasts. All the feasts were to help his people remember who he was and what he had done and what he was doing for them. The feasts are all different ways of remembering, but they don't all drive home the same point. That is, each of the feasts does not simply replicate the same message. They don't all call for the same thing to be remembered. Now, brothers and sisters, we know from the rest of Scripture that God's work of making a people for himself, of calling people to himself, finds its climactic moment in the work of Christ on the cross. That is, in fact, the centerpiece of God's work on behalf of those who are his. But each Jewish feast doesn't point in the same way to the work of the Son. They don't all highlight and underscore the same thing. Each of the feasts was to enable them to reflect on and remember something about what God had done. If you were looking at the feasts and you wanted a feast that talked about the sacrifice for sin, the Day of Atonement is the right feast to celebrate that. The Day of Atonement was another feast given later on to the people of Israel by God, where the focus would be on addressing the problem of sin, where they brought a sacrifice for sin, a propitiatory sacrifice. Did you notice in the Passover, there's no mention of forgiveness. There's no mention of sin. There's no mention of atonement. Because that's not what the emphasis is. The emphasis is, you used to be that kind of people, and I'm making you a new kind of people. You have been walking with me, and you're going to walk with me in a fresh new way. The emphasis in the Passover is different than that. He establishes the Passover for his people in order to remind them, yes, an animal is killed and blood is put on the door, but that's not repeated. What's repeated is this remembrance. We're leaving. The Passover is not primarily about resolving the sin problem, but by moving the people of God out of one kind of life into another kind of life in a fresh way, they are going to be a worshiping community in a fresh way that they had not yet experienced, a community who belongs to him. The Passover was a celebration of the people of God being delivered into a greater freedom to be who he intended them to be. And this was such a monumental thing to think about. We're being moved from this kind of life to that kind of life. That was such a monumental thing that God says your calendar is going to be changed and you're going to count this as the first day of the year. Their very calendar was altered to forever remember this. Now some might point to the lamb and the blood and seek to make a connection to Jesus' death on the cross. And the blood shed there is a sacrifice that frees us from our sin. But that doesn't appear to be the main point of the Passover. It's not about forgiveness. Nor would it have been prominent in the thoughts of the minds of those who experienced it the first time. I don't think that's what they've been thinking. When they left that morning, I do not think they would have been thinking, we're forgiven. I think they would be thinking, new life. I do not think they would be thinking, we've been sinning and God has forgiven us. I think they would be thinking, we lived there and now we're going somewhere else. The Passover was to be a regular reminder that their God was a powerful God who, by his own doing, made them into a nation in a way that they had not yet fully experienced, and to draw them to follow him as worshipers in ways they had only tasted in part up to that point in time. The Passover was to be a regular reminder that their God was a powerful God who, by his own doing, made them into a nation in a way that they had not yet fully experienced, and to draw them to follow him as worshipers in ways they had only tasted in part. Friends, that is part of God's saving work on behalf of the nation of Israel. And candidly, that is part of God's saving work through Jesus on our behalf as well. As Israel needed to be reminded of what God had done, we need to recall what Jesus has accomplished. Although it includes being forgiven, that is not the full extent of what Jesus has done. There is much more to the marvelous grace that comes to us because of the work of God. In Colossians chapter 1, Paul writes, "For he rescued us from the domain of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of his beloved Son." Colossians 1, verse 13. What does Jesus do? Friends, he doesn't just forgive you. He moves you into a new kind of life. Moves you from one kingdom to another kingdom. That's closer to what's going on in the Passover. Moving from one kingdom to another kingdom. In 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter writes and says, You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. We need to remember that. Israel needed to remember that. The Passover was a reminder, an annual, regular reminder. I've made you my people in ways that you have not yet experienced. Please do not misunderstand what I'm saying. I am not diminishing the work of Jesus on the cross to resolve the problem of our sin. But friends, that is not all that God has done for us. I am not suggesting that God was unconcerned with the issue of sin when he established the Passover for the nation. I only want us to consider what it would have meant for them, because that's what God was communicating. And I want us to consider the fullness of what God has did and has done and is doing for those who are his as he draws them to himself. I want to see and feel what was happening in that initial Passover so that I not miss everything that's included in what God is doing on behalf of his people. There is only one reference to the Passover in Paul's letters. It's in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. And there, when he makes mention of the Passover, he doesn't speak about forgiveness or atonement. He talks about new life. He says, leave the old life behind because Christ, our Passover, has been sacrificed. So step into this new life. The focus is on living the new life that has been procured for us. Yes, procured by Christ. But so much richer, deeper, better, gooder than we tend to think if we think Jesus died for my sins so that I can be forgiven. No, God is doing a work to move you from not being a people, not fully experiencing, to being a people, transferring you from one kingdom to another kingdom. That's part of the work of Christ. You might recall that the Last Supper that Jesus celebrated with his disciples was, in fact, part of a Passover meal. He instituted what we call the Last Supper communion at a Passover. He was celebrating this very thing with his disciples, this idea of entering into a new kind of life. The Passover was to be celebrated forever. And in inaugurating what we call the Lord's Supper, Jesus kind of added to the end of the Passover meal something, a new dimension, a fresh understanding of what it means to be the people of God through what God has done. What we have in Jesus' Last Supper is an addition to the Passover, not a replacement, but an elaboration on that celebration to remember we are his people. He has done something to give us this new kind of life. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to take communion together and try to think about what it meant to be Jews celebrating the Passover, but also to be disciples who are experiencing the Lord's Supper for the first time, to make sure that we don't lose sight of all that's included. When the Jews celebrated the first Passover, they did it as a people, not as individuals. They did it as a community. When Jesus inaugurated what we refer to as the Lord's Supper, he and his disciples did it as a group, not as individuals. So we're going to do it as a group. As we step into this next time of worship, you're welcome to participate. That is, if you know Jesus, if Jesus is in fact the one to whom you look to for life, then you're welcome to participate as we share a memorial. A bread and a cup as we remember the Lord's Supper. If, in fact, you have not come to know this Jesus, then we invite you to watch, but don't participate. But if you, in fact, know him, then you're welcome to participate. We're going to do it a little differently. You're going to remain seated. The bread is going to be passed, and we'll reflect for a moment on what the significance of the bread is, and then we're going to take together. And while the bread is being passed, there's a song to be sung, and you can sing and you can worship as we reflect on what it is that the Lord has done. And then we'll take together. And then we'll pass the cup, and there'll be a song to be sung, and we will seek to remember. Don't lose sight that the purpose of the Passover was to remember how God had made his people a new kind of people. And when Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper, which we celebrate, it is to remind us that we are a new kind of people because of what Jesus has done. So we're going to sing, we're going to take together, and we're going to remember.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.